Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Hello and welcome to Alchemy 101, the show that explores all avenues of transformation and aims to offer some nuggets of gold that can support us in living in line with nature in a way that's true to our nature, even though sometimes it feels counterintuitive, just like the nightingale, a bird that sings out in the dark. I'm JJ, the Practical Alchemist, and I'm so glad you could join me today because we're talking about something that's very close to my heart, something that I've had all my life but didn't know it. It's something that many women have, but because it hasn't been widely recognised, people don't tend to talk about it and so don't get help. We're talking about tocophobia. Yes, that is a word, and it means the fear of giving birth. And it wasn't until I met Alexia Leachman that I first heard the term, and then shockingly, I realised that that was me. Still, even though I'm well past childbearing age. Alexia is a coach who's cleared her own fears of giving birth and now helps others have a fear-free birth. She's written 2 books, Fear-Free Childbirth, and another called Head Trash, which was written to help people clear the clutter that's holding them back. This interview proved to be a major personal breakthrough for me, but first I needed to check out this oddly named phobia. I had to look up tocophobia, partly because I wanted to know where the root of the name, and I wanted to know where the toco bit came from. And of course, it's Greek for it, tokos, I think it is the Greek word for childbirth. And then, you see in Google all these questions that people ask. And one of them was, is tocophobia a mental health issue? Is it a mental illness? And some of the replies were quite interesting. One of them was saying, yes, it is a mental illness or a condition that is sometimes cured by therapy. And I was thinking, interesting. I mean, A, is it really a mental illness? That's my question to you. Mm. I suspect not. And B, they say it can't be, or it isn't always cured by therapy, but that's probably because you need to do something more. And that's where you come in with what you do with people and how you help people. So what do you think of this idea of it being a mental illness?
I don't think it's a mental illness. I think it's nearer an anxiety disorder. It's severe anxiety. Yeah. So it's really, even though we get locked into the word fear because of the word phobia, whereas actually if you really get clarity on what fear is, we're usually talking about anxiety unless the fear is present danger. If it's not there present in our environment, then it's an anxiety because we're kind of anticipating it. So we're really talking about birth anxieties, anxieties around pregnancy. But actually, in the work that I do with helping women to conquer their tocophobia, most of the anxieties have got nothing to do with birth. So it's a complex set of anxieties that when women have to confront the experience that is pregnancy and birth, they are really being forced to confront these anxieties head on. And they're actually anxieties that all humans experience, men included, but they don't have to go cross that bridge that is the pregnancy birth experience. So they can kind of sail on through life without necessarily needing to confront them in a way that a woman has to, because she's staring down the barrel of a gun, having to deal with her fear over losing control, her fear of not having control of her body, her fear of being vulnerable, her fear of change, her fear of making the wrong decision. These are things that we all suffer from, not just women on this journey. And so these are the anxieties that I help women to overcome. And it's this combination of all of them together that lines up and creates this stack called tocophobia, which is why, if you want to go and use a phobia clearance technique, for example, and go, oh, I'm just going to clear my phobia of birth, you can't do that because it's not this one isolated thing. Yeah. Not like clear a phobia of spiders or that kind of thing, or injections. Even injections is slightly more complex. Mm-hmm. But yeah, tocophobia is this, it's an amalgamation of lots of anxieties that come together, and they all need to be unpacked. And that requires an inherent knowledge of the condition and what those individual strands are, in my opinion.
Yeah, and it's not just something that's in the mind, it's held in the body as well. And and you know, one of the reasons why we're talking today is that I heard of your experience when you say that you felt an absolute terror when you were first pregnant, and then you had a miscarriage. And for the first time in my life, and at my grand old age, you know, that's saying something, I actually heard somebody voice my experience the one time that I found out that I was pregnant, and I also, it didn't go to term. It, in fact, very quickly, I had a miscarriage. But it was an abject terror. Mm. It wasn't just a phobia. I have never felt terror like it consciously. Yeah. And, you know, then, you know, I was asking you, what causes tocophobia? And you said often it's, you know, it goes back to childbirth or pre-birth. And interesting as well, when I was doing a little bit of research before speaking to you today, I saw that, you know, a lot of the information on the internet, it really doesn't go there in terms of birth trauma. It talks about anxieties that come in during teenage years or early 20s, that sort of thing. You know, when you are maybe thinking about having a baby, thinking about starting a family. But this was a very deep-seated, deep-rooted terror for me. And, you know, you were saying starts in childbirth, traumas in childbirth, well, of course, fitted my story totally. Mm. You know, born with the cord around my neck, called a blue baby, and put straight into an oxygen tent to, an incubator to make sure that I could actually get enough oxygen into my body. Now, of course, I don't have any memory of that terror, but it must have been terrifying.
And that will be within your body. That terror and that trauma is within the fabric of your very being. So the memories of that are going to be very physical. So when that's triggered, that's really going to take you to a very, very deep place. Yeah. And a response that is instinctive, reactive, where it bypasses the conscious mind entirely.
Exactly.
And if I was to say to you, why did you feel that way? You'd be like, well, I don't know. This is what makes it so unsettling, because people have no idea why they feel this way. And it adds to this, the distress of the condition. Because it's often rooted in a trauma that we have no conscious recollection on. Not always. Sometimes it's not always a birth trauma, our own birth trauma, but I would say 80% of the time it is. And because many of us don't remember our birth, it can mean that we literally just feel entirely clueless as to why we feel this way. And that just simply adds another layer to this kind of distress that you're feeling, because it makes no sense. So when people say that tocophobia is an irrational phobia, so what does irrational mean? It means it makes no sense. So the bit of it that makes no sense is, why do I feel it? Why am I suffering with this? But there's a huge part of it that makes total sense, which is birth with high maternal mortality rates is something that is actually worth getting worried about. I mean, it's not like completely risk-free. So there are many women that suffer from tocophobia go, well, duh, of course I'm going to be scared. I could die giving birth. The doctors might decide to prioritize the baby over me. Why would I want to walk into that kind of experience? So there's a part of them that is almost screaming from the rooftops going, why doesn't anybody understand how I feel? This is so obvious. And yet there's another part of them at the same time going, but why am I feeling this? Yeah. I don't know how I'm feeling it. When my sister is pregnant, she's loving it. She's being all, you know, gorgeous and glowing, and can't wait to give birth to a baby. Why am I feeling the way that I am? And so this is what makes women that suffer with it feel very isolated and alone, because they think that it's just them. And because no one's talking about tocophobia, even though it's got very high prevalence rates, so the data suggests a very low end of maybe 4 or 5%, But I think you're looking at nearer maybe 30%, because I don't think the data is necessarily gathered in a way that is reflective of what really is going on, because most women that suffer from it have never, ever put themselves in a situation where they're ever going to give birth. So how are the people gathering the data finding the prevalence rates? Are they just asking women in the maternity ward? Well, these tocophobic women are not going to be anywhere near that maternity ward, because some of them can't even get intimate with their partners or hold down a long-term relationship, because inevitably the conversation will come around to kids and suddenly they're running a mile. So, you know, it's very difficult, I think, to understand how high this prevalence rate is, which is why no one's talking about it and no one's heard of it. And yet I think a lot of women are suffering from this in silence and not even knowing that they have it in many instances.
Well, I have to thank you for opening my eyes, as I say, at this age, because I've gone through life really not understanding it at all. And, you know, two things about that. One, when I was younger and of childbearing age, I remember talking to a doctor and saying, no, you know, me and my first husband didn't want children. And that was absolutely, you know, what do you mean you don't want children? How can that be? Oh, you'll be fine. Just, you know, you'll be fine. Have a child. That'll solve all your problems. Well, really? I don't think so. And then the second thing is that I now realize, and again, I say at this grand old age, I now realize that all my life I've been slightly uncomfortable around babies.
Mm.
And I've never talked about that with anybody before. This is a first, me confessing it now.
Yeah.
And now I realize why.
Mm.
And I'm getting very emotional now. But I wanted to say this now, because I suspect there are many women out there who feel the same way and don't know why, and feel that they're lesser because of it.
Mm. I had an experience when I was working, and a woman brought her twins into work. And, you know, not what normally happens is they bring babies in and everyone's cooing over the new little arrival.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then suddenly there was a milk squirting situation going on, and she had to hand one of them over, and I was standing next to her. So she handed a baby to me, and I just freaked out and had to just pass the baby on. So I was like, I literally can't hold this. Yeah. Take it away. And I had to go running to the toilet, and I just burst into tears. And that was in my mid-20s. And I was like, what?
Yes.
What is wrong with you? And at that, back then, I had no idea, but I was always one of these people that's like, career first, don't want kids, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, that was the tocophobia speaking.
Yeah.
I was rationalizing, trying correct. To make sense of these deep feelings that I wasn't aware of. And so just trying to come up with a way of, making it make sense to me.
Mm.
And I think, I don't know, for most people, if they don't really have an understanding, if you've seen the film Mr. and Mrs. Smith with Angelina Jolie,
yes.
there's a scene in there where she's at this do next door, and she's turned up in her thigh-high black boots, and somebody hands her a baby, and you can see her holding it like it's a pair of dirty pants.
Yeah.
And her face is like, that's a tocophobic woman right there. She's just holding it, looking at her husband over the wing in the kitchen going, oh my God, no, don't judge me for this. I honestly don't want this, you know. And that I think is a reflective of what women suffer it, that feel like, but let's not forget there are women that suffer with this but desperately want kids.
Right.
So trying to make sense of this inherent desire within you to be a mother, but you know that to be a mother, you have to cross over that bridge that is the pregnancy and birth experience. And that bridge is covered in wolves bearing teeth. And you're like, how on earth am I going to make it over that? Because I can't see a way through that. That's where I was. I was like, I could imagine myself being a mother, but I couldn't draw the dots. In my head, there was a huge chasm where I couldn't figure it out. There was no path between my current state and me and motherhood, which meant that when I did fall pregnant, which was accidental, in a relationship that I'd been with somebody for 6-7 years, we hadn't had the kids conversation. So I was then wrestling with, oh my God, he's going to leave me. He doesn't want kids. I didn't even know whether he wanted kids, because I'd never had that conversation with him, even though it was a serious conversation, because I couldn't.
Yeah.
It wasn't a conversation that I could have.
Yeah.
And so I think this is very typical of that experience where, and when I've described this thing where people can't see a path between where they are now and motherhood, because it just, they've blacked it out. They have just literally, whatever happened to them that made them fear it, that the trauma has just created this huge pit of blackness that means they it's not lit up. They can't see what's going on there and there's no way through it. Does that make sense?
Oh, it does make sense. Absolutely. Yeah. Yes. And of course, you feel, well, I don't know if I felt anything really. I didn't understand the terror when that happened. And I've never really quite understood the kind of discomfort that I felt around babies and, you know, you say, absolutely, everybody's cooing around a newborn baby and you're just standing there thinking, well, I don't know, really, I don't know about this. And you can, if you allow it to, feel very uncomfortable and very other, you know, not quite part of the human race, because you're not cooing over this new life and being delighted. But, you know, it's that lack of understanding. But then if you talk to anybody about that, you are condemned as a heartless woman, because women are supposed to have children, love children, be mothers. And if you're not that, there can be an awful lot of othering going on.
Yeah. And let's not forget that there are some women that just don't want kids.
Yeah.
So that doesn't mean that you have tocophobia. So I've got a lot of women that come to me for help and they want help making that decision. At the moment, they might be in a place where I want to make a decision, but I don't know whether it's my tocophobia speaking or if it's my heart. And I need to clear the fear so that I can tune into my heart and hear what that wants.
Yeah, nice.
And so there's a lot of women I've worked with where, you know, we've cleared all the trauma and the fear. And now they're like, actually, I don't want kids. And I'm okay with that. I'm peaceful with that decision. And that's the right thing for me right now. Of course, I might change my mind in a few years, but right now, this is not what I want.
Yes.
And to be able to answer that truly and not make that call from a place of fear, the way you know, when you're forced to make a decision from a place of fear, you know that it's, you're on shaky territory. And so it might be that later on, maybe you revisit that decision and then it's filled with regret because you know you didn't make it from the right place. And so I've also worked with women that are way past being able to have a baby. So they're in their mid-40s, for example, and they want to make peace with that decision because it continues to eat them up inside, because they know that they were making it from a place of fear. And they just want to know, what would my decision be? And I need to reach a place of peace with this, because these decisions, they stay with us until the last breath, just as our birth experience does.
Yeah.
So these are very profound experiences for women. And, you know, whether your decision, whether or not to have a child, if you do decide to go ahead, what that birth experience is like, what that pregnancy experience is like, these are experiences that will live with you forever. So it's important that you reach a place of peace and contentment around those decisions and around those experiences, because every time you have a birthday, your kid has a birthday, you will be reminded of that birth, just as I've just had my two have just had their births. And the second birth I had was just the most incredible, profound experience, and now I can feel myself just getting emotional thinking about it again, because it was so incredible. And whenever it's her birthday, I just get filled with the memories of that incredible experience. Now, if that's a traumatic experience, I can't bear to think what I would have to go through every year until I die, having to relive that.
Yeah.
So, you know, doing this emotional work to prepare for these kind of life stages, these life events that we go through as women, I think is incredibly important, because we owe it to ourselves, because we have to live with ourselves forever.
Yeah. Yeah, we do. We do. I wish I'd met you a long, long time ago, but that would probably have been impossible, because I think I'm a bit older than you. But anyway. Yes. Anyway, we won't dwell on that. Instead, we'll take a short break now to hear these messages from our station sponsors.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
And you're listening to Alchemy 101 here on UK Health Radio with me, JJ Stenhouse, the practical alchemist, and my guest today, Alexia Leachman, whose work on tocophobia led her to develop a potent method of clearing what she calls our head trash, all the clutter in our minds and bodies that's holding us back and stopping us from living our fullest lives. Here's Alexia again.
Okay, so I came up with this when I was pregnant and terrified, and I didn't know that I had tocophobia. I didn't know that you can't do anything about it. All I knew is that I had a due date hurtling my way, and how I felt in that moment was that I do not want to be conscious when that happens. You need to knock me out with all the drugs and fish that baby out because I do not want to be there. Now, obviously, that's not allowed, and yeah. I have to be awake and conscious. Through that experience. And that was something that I was like, I can't do that. There's no way I can do that. So I decided I need to sort this out. So I'd already been learning a number of therapeutic techniques. So I needed to find a way of doing this DIY style, because the way that I was looking at this situation was that I did not have the therapy budget to deal with what was going on in my head. Because when I mapped out all my fears, when I wrote them all down, that was a very, very long list indeed. And if I had a weekly session, my child would have been three by the time I would have got to the bottom of it. So there's no way that that was going to be possible. And I needed to do this myself. So I developed a DIY way of doing that. And I worked on myself during my second trimester. And so by the end of my second trimester, I was like, you know what? I'm going to ditch that C-section plan and I'm going to go for a home birth, which is quite telling in itself. And that's what I ended up having. My firstborn was born at home in the kitchen, and it was the most incredible 8-hour experience. It was pain-free. So all the fears I had, it's going to be the most painful thing in the world, none of that materialized. And it was incredible. And it was like, wow. But I didn't really know whether it had worked, because, you know, like, that was just one experience. And there's a lot of women that have these incredible birth experiences. So maybe my stuff just, like the doctors say, it's all right. It'll be all right on the day.
Yeah.
So maybe that had happened. I didn't really know deep down whether that was my experience. So it needed a second birth to come along for me to kind of road test and test. Were my fears still gone? How did I feel now? And of course, this time around, I was geriatric because I was over 40 for the birth. And so I had new fears. That's a whole separate conversation.
I know. Let's not go there with that.
So I had a lot of new fears that were being rammed down my throat around, like, my placenta not making it past the due date, for example, and having a stillborn on my hands. So I was wrestling with a whole new level of fear. So I had new material to work with in terms of my method. So I was able to road test again. And this is the second birth that was just euphoric and incredible, with the one that really gives me goosebumps when I think about it today. And it was while I was breastfeeding this, my second daughter, that I started getting women getting in touch with me that I don't even know who they are, but they'd clearly heard about my experience, wanting to know how I did it. So the way that I saw it, I really needed to explain how I unpacked all of those fears, because there was a lot, and then what my method was. So these emails were quite long. And after a while, I was like, this is ridiculous. I'm breastfeeding. I've got a new baby. This is silly. If I get another one of these, I'm going to write a book. And that's what I did. I ended up writing a book within 3 months. And then I was like, well, now what am I going to do in this book? I need to share some of these things quickly with people because I need to edit and blah, blah. So I launched my Fear-Free Childbirth podcast, and it very quickly just went crazy. And it clearly hit a vein with people and women who were searching for, they wanted a fear-free childbirth. That's what they were looking for. And that's how they found me. And so I started sharing bits of my method through my podcast. And I realized that these women needed a way to heal their own fears as I did, DIY style, because a lot of women that are facing that journey, maybe they're on maternity leave, they've lost their income, they're having to ask money from their other half, they're not always financially independent. So I needed to find affordable ways that didn't involve working with me one-to-one that they could then heal themselves. So this led me to create lots of self-healing products. My background as a business marketing person, creating products for big global health brands, was very useful in that respect. So I created lots of healing products and programs and ways that people can use to clear their fears online. I eventually published my book, Fearless Birthing, and which includes my method in it. So women are able to clear their fears themselves using the DIY version of the method I share in my book, which is also in my non-birthy book, the Clear Your Head Trash book, which is for a more general audience. And so this is it's proven to be a very powerful and potent process for getting rid of your anxieties, of your birth fears, and your sabotage, your inner conflicts, traumas now as well, so that you can get rid of the head trash, and it works very quickly. So to give you a sense of how quick, when I was in my first labor, there was, I'd worked on my fear of pain, so that's a thing that I had going on. But when I was in the middle of labor and baby's head was about to crown, forgive me for being too graphic, but I was getting stuck at that point. And I had midwife, she said, look, we've got ambulance in the front room. We're going to take you in. If baby doesn't come out in your next contraction, what's going on? And I was like, I know what it is. It's the fear of pain of the ring of fire, which is a very known thing. And so I was like, oh my goodness. So I went inward at that point in between contractions and cleared my fear in between contractions, and baby came out in the next contraction. So there's a very quick version of it when you can be very laser with this method, but it also works for incredibly complex conditions like tocophobia, where you're unraveling the complex anxieties that are going on. And so I then grew a name for myself working with women privately on their tocophobia, which is often tied in with things like OCD or anxiety or depression, because there's trauma at the root many times. This is feeding many other mental health conditions that they're wrestling with. Also, because tocophobia is very isolating and they don't understand it, and they're having, it's affecting their relationship, their ability to be intimate. They can't be there at like baby showers, or when a friend at work announces her pregnancy. I mean, all these things are going into a supermarket and seeing a pregnant woman is a challenge. So you can see how this could feed anxiety and depression in quite a significant way and make people want to stay at home. And so I've worked a lot with some very kind of meaty mental health conditions using this method, and it's proving itself to be very elegant and swiftly getting rid of some very hardcore conditions. And so there are some women that can't afford one-to-one, and so they're using my self-healing products that I've created. There's one lady, she joined my membership, the Clearance Club, and she got rid of her tocophobia and her depression on her own in 2 months. And she's now expecting her baby any day now, where she couldn't even leave the house. She couldn't even have sex with her partner because it was too terrifying, the prospect of what lay beyond. So this work of my own tocophobia has birthed not only my two children, but also a modality that I'm now expanding and taking out so that women can get rid of their fears. But what I'm learning and seeing is they're not just getting rid of, you know, the birth is just the beginning of their story. Because as I've discovered, as I see, is these fears that are contributing to birth and pregnancy and tocophobia, they're not pregnancy fears, they're human fears. So once they let go of their fear of appearing vulnerable, of having fear of making the wrong decision, of losing control, these are things that enable them after that to go and quit their job and start their business. Maybe go back to college and study for the career they wish they'd done. There's one lady she started having tocophobia. She then overcame that to have two babies of her own, and then loved birth and pregnancy so much that she's now on her second surrogate baby, which is, wow. I never anticipated that as an outcome.
But isn't that beautiful? Isn't it beautiful though that isn't this what happens so often? We find a way through our own traumas, our own issues, and then we develop something which will help other people. I think that's absolutely wonderful. Yeah. Mm. Yeah, fantastic. And I love the way that it's not just focusing on the one thing. Yes, it helps you with tocophobia, but it will help anybody who has fears and who has blocks stopping them from getting on. And I love looking at your website. And you ask people what kind of ball they are.
Yeah.
Are you a washing ball, a bouncy ball, or, you know, tell
it's
me
a ball
a little
or snooker ball.
Yeah, exactly. A snooker ball. I like that one. So I think that's a great way. So explain that a little bit, but it's also a great way of getting into where people are with things, isn't it?
Yeah. So in my book, Clear Your Head Trash, I start just describing these balls. And the way I describe it is where you are on your head trash journey, or how much head trash have you got versus how much healing have you done, got to do. So you at the lower end, and it very closely mirrors the mental health continuum for those health, you know, therapists among the guy, like, oh, right, that's what that is. And so the conqueror is somebody that may be wrestling with depression and anxiety. They're very prickly. And they pick up everything that's going around. You can imagine putting a conker at the bottom of your bag, and it'll have all the sweet wrappers stuck to it. It'll have all the dust. You won't want to pick it up because it's going to be really painful. So it hurts you, but it doesn't want to hurt you. It just, that's what it is, right? So just like conkers are very prickly people, they will have hurtful behavior. They may be hurtful in what they say. They don't mean to, but that's just their own pain coming and expressing itself. They have a hard core of hurt and trauma that they are locking away and numbing themselves to so that they can survive and be okay. So that's somebody with a lot of head trash in my world, and they've got a lot of healing ahead of them to do. So when they start to do that healing, then they soften their prickles and they become a washing ball. Now the washing ball, you can hold a washing ball in your hand. I've got one here. And so when you think about the washing ball, you know, it's very, you know, you still got the little prickles, yeah. But I can hold that now.
Yeah.
Now the thing about a washing ball, it's softer and it's colourful. It's not as, you know, not as kind of terrifying as a conker or a chestnut. and the thing about a washing ball is now they're maybe a little bit more self-aware on their patterns. So they now are aware that they have these repetitive damaging patterns that are going on in their life. Maybe they keep going out with the same guys that treat them badly. Maybe they keep getting fired from jobs. Whatever it is, they now have an awareness about these terrible sabotaging patterns they have. And so they are going round and round in circles, just like they would in a washing machine. And it can be quite wet and tearful because now they're aware of their patterns. And also they've kind of unlocked a little bit of their trauma that they're very, what some professionals might call bubbling, where it's very close to the surface and they feel like they could burst into tears at any moment if you say the wrong thing. They might just spring out some tears and they can't, they take a lot of energy just keeping themselves not from doing that because they feel like they're close to bursting at any moment. So that's the washing ball.
I do love that analogy, and there's more to come. But first, time for another short break for more messages from our sponsors. Back right after this.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
And you're listening to Alchemy 101 here on UK Health Radio, the world's number one talk health radio station, with me, JJ, the Practical Alchemist, and my guest, Alexia Leachman, who was taking us through her metaphor for different levels of healing. Here she is with more.
If you continue to do the healing from washing ball, you become a bouncy ball. Now, a bouncy ball is obviously a lot more fun, a lot more colourful. You can come out to play. So people are like, hey, do you want to come for a drink? Because you don't feel so heavy and down on yourself. You know, conkers don't often get invited out for drinks because they're just not pleasant. And it's not because they're horrible. They just bring the energy down, right? So a bouncy ball is a bit more joyful. But they can be super high up and they can be super down. They can be all over the place because they're just... You know, they're up and down, up and down, up and down. And the thing with the bouncy ball is while they can be more outgoing and maybe have a little bit more confidence about them, every now and then you might say something and they just get triggered and they're unpredictable and they just might fly off the handle. And it's like, what did I say? What's going on? Because they still have these triggers that are very, very clearly in place that means they can become reactive. So you continue your healing journey and you evolve from the bouncy ball onto the snooker ball. Now, a snooker ball just feels so good in the hand, doesn't it? It just like you always want to stroke it because it just feels so good and it's cool. And the thing about a snooker ball is it's going places. It's got direction. I mean, a bouncy ball's all over the place. You try and get a bouncy ball to head in a certain direction and it's going to hit something, bounce off and ricochet. Snooker ball, on the other hand, has got trajectory. So people who are snooker balls can set a goal. They're like, I'm going to lose weight. I'm going to start this thing. I'm going to do this course. I'm going to get that promotion. They can set these goals in their lives and actually achieve them. And that people around them, like the bouncy balls, are going to go, oh, they look like they've got their life together. I'm going to go and get help from these guys. So these guys are probably the coaches and the middle managers. They've got their lives in order to a degree and they're making really good progress. But as we all know with the snooker ball, what happens to the snooker ball is every now and then they fall in their pocket and suddenly it's all dark and they're like, where am I? And that's because they've got some deeper wounds that they still haven't wrestled with. They still haven't healed. Some self-sabotaging patterns that they still are succumbing to. And so they still have work to do, right? But they're pretty much in a good place. And so if you continue from this place, you then continue your healing and become a glitter ball. Now, a glitter ball is just the life and soul of the party. Everybody wants to be around the glitter ball. It's where all the light is coming. And you look up to the glitter ball. So they make good influences. They make good leaders in business. They are people that you will follow, that you will take direction from, take inspiration from. But of course, what makes the glitter ball so incredible And what we really know all deep down is a glitter ball isn't a light. So you're not looking at it because it's the light. You're looking at it because it's reflecting light back at you. Well, whose light is it reflecting? It's reflecting your light back at you. So when you're in the presence of a glitter ball, you recognize your own gifts, your own talents, your own light. And that's what makes them so wonderful to be around, is their charisma is bringing you in, is hooking you in. And you realize that you are worthy, that you have gifts to give. And that's what makes you want to be around them. And let's be honest, they've still got their own inner work to do. They're not a complete, you know, they're not completely shining. They've got their little chinks. Every now and then they lose a little mirror as well.
Yes.
They've still got their work to do, but they're in a good place. They're in a peaceful place. They're happy, content, and thriving. And so when you come to my website, you can do a quiz to find out which one you are, and then understand where you are on this will help you to direct your healing efforts. Because when we are on the healing journey, it can be very overwhelming. Like, where do I start? How do I move forward from this? Especially if you're at conquer stage where you feel like you're in this pit and you're like, how do I get out? So what I then do is I really help people, depending on what ball they're at, is go, okay, if you're a conquer, you need to start with this stuff. If you're a washing ball, have you done the conquer stuff? Make sure you go back and check what you haven't done at conquer level, because that's going to give you that solid emotional foundation of resilience. And then, but if you have done all that stuff, this is what you need to focus on. So it's a way of helping people to understand, where are they on this ladder of head trash and healing? And where do they need to focus their attention to get a big bang for their buck? Because my background is business and marketing. I hate wasting time, and I want to help people to have the shortcut where possible. So all of my work is driven by this efficiency and this need to kind of achieve results fast. And it does achieve, you know, the method itself, head trash clearance, is very fast and potent. But within that, you need to navigate and know what your healing roadmap looks like. Well, what is it that I need to clear? So with my tocophobia work, I know I can predict with a high level of certainty that if you come to me with tocophobia, what your list of fears and anxieties are going to be. And I've mapped that list out, and I share that with my clients. I say, well, 80% of your stuff's going to be on this list, and the other 20 is going to be stuff that's going to be unique to you. But I can bet that that 80%, you just go and do that on your own and come back to me. We'll work on the 20% together, just so that people can, this is how people can achieve these fast results, because it doesn't always need this one-to-one experience with a professional. I want to empower people to own their mental health and to be in charge of that and to be able to crack on their own. Some people need that help for sure, but some people just want to be shown what to do, and then they're off to the races. And yeah, they come in if they need a little bit of guidance and help, but essentially I want to empower people to be able to heal, to do that self-healing. And I think the conquer to glitter ball, the way that I describe that, just helps people to navigate that in an easy way that doesn't sound, that hopefully sounds fun. Because for me, healing, just because you have a lot of head trash, which might suck, doesn't mean that the healing journey needs to suck, right? That bit can be, let's make that bit fun.
Yeah.
And let's engage with that.
Yeah. And I think it's absolutely brilliant. I think it's great what you're doing. I should maybe explain what a conquer is for our non-British listeners. A conquer is a horse chestnut, which the nut comes inside, grows inside this very, very prickly casing. And kids take the conkers, the nuts out at kind of this time of year, isn't it?
Just about now.
And they play with them. That's a whole other thing. But anyway, just for our non-British listeners, that's what a conquer is. I think it's an absolutely brilliant way of really helping people see where they are on this journey. Absolutely fantastic. And I love that you're bringing this sensibility to it. So we're not talking about sitting down and talking forever and a day about your problems and not getting anywhere. We're talking about laser focused work that can clear what's going on with you. Yeah. And that comes, you have a background in various modalities, don't you? You've brought them all together in this. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I've trained in things like NLP, in TFT, in tapas acupressure techniques. So I've got and also my background in, and I think, but I also, because I've not come from the therapeutic world or the psychotherapy world. I am just coming at it from my own perspective of trying to solve, like, what is it that do I need to get rid of here? And let's get rid of it. So I'm not getting lost in psychology, even though I've studied psychology in the context of marketing, which is desperately not appropriate at all, but I have got a little bit of an interest in that. But it's not getting lost in the psychology, because actually a lot of talking therapy is getting lost in the psychology of something. And so, yes, there's value in understanding our wounds and understanding the psychology, and that can help you navigate your situation when you're at conquer level and washing ball, because it can help you kind of organize it and wade through it and go, oh, this must be because of da 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 da. And you can use that, the understanding of psychology, to kind of identify things and name them and maybe draw it out. But once you get past snooker ball level into glitter ball territory, psychology is useless, because at that point you've got a reasonably good understanding and high level of self-awareness, but you're hitting subconscious wounds, maybe past life traumas, in utero traumas, childhood stuff that's got very, you could talk about it till the cows come in, but you haven't got a conscious recollection of it. So talking about it is not really going to help you, because you need to go much deeper to do this clearance work. And so having a way of working deeply with your subconscious, that's what's going to bring about this change. So yes, psychology can be helpful, but I think a lot of people, psychology is like the foyer in the hotel. And some people never make it into the conference room. They just stay in the foyer, which is psychology. Whereas I'm inviting them straight. Like, if you want, you can bypass the foyer entirely and come straight into one of the conference rooms, hit the workshop, and let's clear it straight away. If you want, we can bypass that entirely. So it has got value, but let's not get distracted with the psychology part.
No, and I love that. Yes, psychology has a place always. And in fact, I was talking about this just last night with somebody who's very much into all of that. And, you know, and just expressing how extraordinary it is that something so powerful can be kept so hidden from a person for so long.
Yeah.
In my case, and how, you know, I've always known that there's been something very deep down in there somewhere, in me somewhere, that is still causing an issue. And of course, suddenly I've hit the nail on, you know, or you've helped me hit the nail on the head. This is what it is. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so I can now work on that. And, you know, I can maybe take advantage of your book or whatever. But I have some of the similar tools to you to work on it myself. But I can do that now. But until these things reveal themselves and you kind of, I mean, I know a lot of people say, well, you don't have to know what's wrong with you to clear it. And, you know, to a certain extent, that's true. Yes. But you usually need some help.
Usually. Yeah, you need to be able to target your intent. Like, even if it's just placing your intention on saying, I want to clear this.
Exactly.
Well, this being what exactly? So you still need to have a word that you can use to describe it. Sometimes, like, there are sometimes I'm working blind with my clients where we're just literally working with this feeling. But that's very sort of in the moment healing that we can do. But actually, if you really want to do this deep cleansing, this deep healing work, you do have to have a word in a language that is, because the way I like to describe it, and this is the way that I approach trauma work, is I take a theme-based approach to clearing trauma and take it from the assumption that we have lots of micro-events, lots of micro-traumas that have been tagged. If you think about tagging, we're familiar with the idea of tagging with our photos and our songs and tags on YouTube videos and all of that kind of stuff. This is a very familiar concept to us. So if you think about all these individual events and moments and experiences we have, some of them will be tagged. So there might be, you know, you've had an event, an experience that's been tagged with this sense of being rejected. And so the rejection wound, when I approach rejection wound healing, I'm gathering all of those micro events, all those traumas, all those individual moments you've experienced where you had a little inkling of rejection that happened in that moment. So whether it's just somebody that didn't pick you on the school team that day at PE, or whether it's, you know, the guy that dumped you, I mean, whatever kind of scale or intensity that was, there's that event would have been tagged with rejection. So we're kind of targeting all of those events that you've experienced, and also the ones that you don't have a conscious recollection of that might have been in utero. Maybe your mother experienced that rejection, but because you shared a body and experienced everything through her, then her experiences will also be included as part of that. And then ancestral, you know, these, you will have memories within you, within your DNA, of ancestral experiences. Yeah. Yeah. So this is where psychology is limited. You know, how does psychology help you within a in utero experience? How does it help you with ancestral trauma? It can't, because you're not even dealing with your own stuff at that point.
Yeah.
So just being able to target and gather these events into a bucket, if you like, and then go, right, all of these events that have been tagged with rejection, let's just bring all those in, and get rid. And so yeah. I take this event, this theme-based approach to trauma, not event-based, which is, oh, there's a big scary situation that happened and I need to process that and let it go. I take this micro-trauma approach, which is proven to be pretty, helps people to really let go of a lot in one go, which then does clear the way, clear the path for other clearances. Because I found that, and I'm sure many other kind of professionals who work in this area will know too, that these traumas will be feeding anxieties and they'll be feeding the fears. So until you clear the trauma at the root, the tree's still growing, right? The fruits are still bearing fruit until you get rid of the roots.
Yeah.
So taking this theme-based approach to the trauma healing enables us to really go quite deep with the roots and just pull it all out from where it's coming in all the places, not just from your current life that you can remember.
Exactly. I think that's so valuable. And we talked before we started recording this about timeline therapy, and I trained in timeline therapy. And, you know, when you're training, you do it, you experience it, because you have to be able to experience it and work on yourself. And yes, I mean, you can go to birth, pre-birth, but you still have to be able to recognize what it is that you experienced. And if you've blanked, or you can't, you know, consciously name or recollect or see or even think about maybe something that happened at birth or pre-birth, it's very difficult to clear that.
Yeah.
Because you have to be able to pinpoint it on your timeline and say, that's what I'm clearing. So that's where all of these things do have certain limitations. Yeah. And I can see that what you're doing would work really well. So it's brilliant that you've created this system.
Yeah, no, it's very exciting. And I'm, you know, what was interesting for me is when I did park my business, because I was a business coach and I found out I was pregnant. So when, you know, after a while, there were some of my business contacts were like, oh, all that fear clearance stuff you're doing around birth, does that work on business stuff too? So I was like, well, of course it does, you know. So I went back to my business work, and then identifying where some of these, where the head trash is that stands between you and some of the business things that you're looking to achieve. So maybe around revenue or impact or visibility, for example, was very, very interesting to me. And this is where in utero trauma really kind of showed me, not in utero, childhood trauma and this unknown trauma, these micro events, let's say, really revealed themselves. And I ended up working with a lot of female business owners. So some CEOs, some people that were setting up their own coaching practices. So different levels of business and scale of businesses. And we were working on visibility specifically, because that's something that really does affect a lot of women, is, you know, putting themselves up and being very visible. And during our sessions, I started noticing a pattern, and they all kept mentioning games of hide and seek when they were children. And I was like, well, isn't that interesting?
Wow.
So we dig in. So they're like, oh, yeah, no, I've just had a memory, because often the memories of where this head trash was stemmed from would come up in a session. They just sort of, it would suddenly just emerge and bubble up to the surface. So hide and seek was coming up a lot. And what I realized is so there was one event where the you know, she was left in the cupboard by her older brother, and then he decided it'd be super funny not to come and find her and leave her there all afternoon. Someone else was left in the washing basket, and again was left in the washing basket all afternoon. So they were kind of abandoned and rejected, excuse me, in various places in the home. But when you think about the rules of hide and seek, you're like, okay, for me to win the game, I've got to be quiet, play small, because I can't be seen. And if I do say anything, like say anything, then I will lose the game. So it's in my interest to play small, be quiet, and stay hidden. Now, of course, as a female business owner, if you're still playing by those rules, you're going to have a visibility.
You're going to have a lot of trouble. Yeah, exactly.
And so we found, I realized that when we, you know, this was the event that was at the root of their visibility challenges as a business owner, were these games of hide and seek they played when they were five or six. Wow. Which, you know, if you said, oh, let's clear some traumas behind your visibility, who would say, oh, yeah, no, hide and seek, that'll be it? Because that just seems like such an innocent, fun thing to do. And now when my kids are like playing hide and seek, I'm like, ooh.
I'm sure it won't affect them. Well, Liz, Alexia, it's been absolutely brilliant talking with you. And I have to say thank you so much from my own experience, because you have just in this short time really helped me sort something out, or start me off on a journey to sorting something out that has been with me since birth and probably before birth, which I haven't until now been able to name. So thank you so much. I'm sure that our listeners will also find something in this, because there's a lot in what you're doing for everybody. Just remind us before we leave, where do people find you online?
So if they're interested in the more general head trash work on the personal side, on their healing journey, then clearyourheadtrash.com, which is the same name as the book. If they're pregnant or they think they might have tocophobia, then fearfreechildbirth.com. And if they're interested in training or learning more about the method itself, which is called Head Trash Clearance, then I train coaches and therapists and healers and anybody that's in the business of change, then that's headtrashclearance.com.
I love it. I love it. Well done. I wish you all the best with all of your work. And of course, you have a show here on UK Health Radio as well, which people can
listen to. Yes, the Fear Free Childbirth show.
Yes, exactly. So I do recommend, for more information on tocophobia, you might want to listen to Alexia's show, which is fantastic. And let's hope that everybody who listens to this and listens to your show, who has these issues, really finds a way through them very quickly.
Thank you, JJ, for having me. It's been brilliant.
Oh, thank you very much. Alexia Leachman, who's just had a profound effect on my own healing journey. And as soon as I heard Alexia talk about her work, I knew I'd struck gold. It's never too late to work on ourselves and clear our blocks, and I am immensely grateful. Now, if you recognise yourself as tocophobic in some way, do reach out to Alexia or check out her show, The Fear Free Childbirth Show, here on UK Health Radio. I've written about my experience in my blog, and you'll find that at thepracticalalchemist.uk. While you're there, do subscribe to my newsletter. You can also find me as The Practical Alchemist on Facebook and Instagram. It's time to leave you for today, though. Thank you for listening today. I hope you'll join me again here on UK Health Radio and the UK Health Radio podcast. Until then, it's goodbye from me and that nightingale.